The following is a true story, except for the ending, which just hasn't happened yet. This is Escape from Provo Canyon.
After slashing the back tire of that suspicious rental car parked beneath the grow patch, Matt guns the Beetle Buick up the carb-holstered driveway. He's got a worn jowl. The grimace is lurking. But the only one who's home, the only one who listens, is Benjamin. Meanwhile, I'm at the front door of tonight's party house. On the other side is that which Provo's kept me separated for the past 6 months. That for which I've sacrificed hotel and pizza night to connect with. My teenage heart's pounding, and I burst through the door, and all fucking hell breaks loose. Shouts and screams, it's like a shot went through the party. I'm tackled to the floor, and in an instant, like I'm the runt of a dog pile. When I'm finally picked up off the floor, I'm surrounded by friends, you know, my dear old friends, you know? But it's like a press conference, but instead of like microphones, it's like beers and joints are thrust into my face, you know? Dude, like, what the fuck? Like, where'd you go, dude? What happened with the ramp, you know? I've got beers in both hands, like another one under my arm, another one squeezed between my legs, like, and I've never felt so, like, loved and connected. Like, I'm just, like, overwhelmed with, like, emotion, you know? And the gang shushes, you know, anxious to hear me speak. And I just lean back and I just let it rip at the ceiling. I'm like, ay-ya-ya! Family crisis hits me down the drum throne. And like Jason and Gary, my old bandmates from the Blue Beats, they strap on guitars and, like, everyone's fucking cheering. Meanwhile, down in the maze, Matt slams on the brakes. Snaking up into the foothills, he spies a VW van with a leg poking out the window. Tribal pilgrimage to tonight's party. Matt drops the Beetle Buick in reverse and falls into line. Up at Sally's, Gary calls out tea in the Sahara, which we've never tried before, you know, but fuck it, you know? I snatch the sticks up off the snare, and, like, in my hands, they feel like fucking, like magic wands. And I just click us in. Luckily, Adam, like, he's so fucking rad, he had put a boombox on the fireplace mantle and hit record. So, like, what you're about to hear is a recording from the actual party that night. Like, this is the Tribe and the Blue Beats. Second chorus, you know, we break off into a jam, and I'm like flailing the hi-hats and like pumping the kick, trying to push us into like a reggae steppers beat. And then I crack the snare and we're fucking off to the races. Gary's fucking, like, ratcheting up the tension. And I just explode onto the ride cymbal. And Jason's wailing and doing his best sting. And I just stagger the beat back down into, like, the drop three. And the fucking living room just goes berserk. Now we're back in the chorus. And
The whole tribe is like singing along.
My young heart sways like this moment, it should not exist. Yeah, here I am, like, jamming with all my friends, you know? Like, this moment, it does exist. Like, I'm fucking back.
Yeah, playing with Jason and Gary, all those police songs for all my friends, like, that's as high as I get. I can't get any higher. You know, I'm brought right back to where I was, you know, before I was taken away. This is the New Year's Eve show that never happened. But little do I know, down at the bottom of the driveway, two black and whites have pulled up. Now, Saratoga's no Detroit. I think Detroit was like the murder capital back then. Anyways, for Saratoga cops, like Friday night, there's no assaults or carjackings, you know, like what's on the docket? Aside from like a tire slashing up at Imagination Land, go find the kids' party and break it up. We're going to stake out 7-Eleven, wait for the kids to muster, tail the caravan as it winds up into the mountains with like legs poking out of the windows, you know, just find the teenage wildlife, follow that, and there's your party. Radio it in, wait for backup, and when it comes, barge in and break that shit up, which of course is insane. Like, just follow the logic. You've got like 150 kids, everyone's drunk and stoned, and who knows what else. Five kids to a car, you've just flushed like 30 drunk drivers out in the streets. But yeah, you know, no thugs in our house.
But anyways, as Matt's rolling up to the party, he sees parked next to the cop cars a black rental. Its rear left tire, a spare.
So I'm blazing away in the middle of Truth Hits Everyone. All of a sudden, the door flings wide open, and these flashlights slice through the haze of, like, fucking weed smoke. And there's, like, these full-on, like, deep male adult voices, you know, official. It's the man, you know? It's like, everyone stay where you are! One of the cops hits the lights, and it's like flipping over a log or like a piece of plywood that's been sitting in the gardens. Is fucking like cockroaches just scattering. Me, I'm up off the drum throne, and I'm out the side door like in a fucking second. And now we're all in the back patio, but so are the cops, you know, who are like corralling everyone around the pool and against this retaining wall. It's like, fuck, I'm trapped. And you can hear the clink of bottles, everyone's stashing, you know, paraphernalia and planter boxes. And one of the cops, he starts pushing into the crowd, shining his flashlight into faces and hands and pockets, you know. Come on, let's see some ID. Let's see some ID.
Across the pool, I see Matt, like, waving frantically. Jostled by the crowd, I lose sight of him, but I catch a fleeting glimpse of purple.
And it's like, no. And all of a sudden, a glass sliding door opens, and an arm pulls me in. The curtains are drawn shut, and I turn around, and it's Adam's girlfriend's mom, Sally. And she just puts her fingers up to her lips like, you know, hey, be quiet. And then she just slips outside. And I'm just standing there, frozen. And then the murmur of the crowd dies down, and I can hear her dealing with these cops, you know. She's like, good evening, boys. You know, she calls them boys, but not officers. Yeah, this is my house. These kids, yeah, they're all under my supervision. What? You know, underage drinking? I don't know anything about that, but can I see your warrant? You don't have a warrant. This looks fucking rad. You know, like, hearing this adult woman manhandle the cops. At the end, she promises to keep the noise down, no more bands. And I'm like, ah, man, because I want to keep playing. And so after the cops flush their drunk drivers out into the streets, Sally comes back through the sliding glass door, and she's like, hey, you should probably stay here a bit, you know, keep a low profile. And she hands me a joint, and I'm like, thanks, I'm Jow, by the way. And she's like, oh yeah, I know who you are. So, the Grimace has come to Saratoga. He's hot on my tail. The dude's thrown his ring around my old house, which has led him to Imagination Land, and then most likely to Goodyear Tires, thanks to Matt. But Sally's, that was too close for comfort. And I promise Adam, you know, I'll keep it cool. And so hold up at the Carbajals, there's not much else to do except look forward to Matt's daily intelligence brief. For example, today I learned that the Grimace has followed a skater to the top of Pepper Lane, where the tribe is gathered. Now, all Saratoga skaters, they hold a sweet spot for Pepper Lane inside their insolent hearts. Pepper's this super long street up in the foothills. It's like not too steep, not too flat. Just perfect for expressive soul skating. And so for the Grimace to have sullied our hallowed skate spot, you know, with his dingy purple polo and fucking goons in tow, he's only making it harder on himself. So the Grimace starts in showing everybody pictures of me, and he's like, hey, like, do you recognize this person? And Crooksy, who's a little late to the party and is always super high, is like, no way, Jowie. And the Grimace, he tastes blood. He's like, hey, who, what did you say? You know, I'm looking for a Jeffrey. And fucking the Red Ape just gives Crooksy like a fucking sidelong Charlie horse. It's like, fucking dude, shut up, you know? And then the Grimace notices this, and then he tries to start it on the Red Ape, you know? He's like fucking poking the bear. He has no idea who he's up against. And so with the Grimace, the Red Ape starts in, plucking his goose to extract the maximum amount of hissing. You know, he just pushes off down Pepper and just lets rip this jeering falsetto. And that, like, triggers the rest of the fucking tribe, you know, and now they're all heckling the fucking Grimace and his goons. So, yeah, you know, the tribe, they're not telling the Grimace fucking anything. Which feels, like, fucking awesome, you know? It's like, my tribe has my back, but still, I'm sketched out. What am I gonna do if I see the Grimace coming up the driveway? But Hank's, you know, he's also got my back. He's so rad. He's the full-on libertarian. Hank's home is his castle, so no one fucks with Hank. And he was like, God damn it, Jefferson, like anyone comes up here, I'll sick Benjamin on sorry ass. And if that doesn't do the trick, I got a BB gun in the garage, okay? And like he fucking did. He kept it next to the tools in the carport. He showed it to me. Hank is so rad. He was ready to go to war for me, which felt really, really cool. But, you know, I'll say it again. It was like selfish of me to accept his protection because he could get into a shit ton of trouble. And I don't know if he or Barb ever considered it. I know I didn't. But to Hank's credit, he put his ass on the line for me, and I'll never be able to repay him for that. So a few days later, the Grimace is staking out my friend Carolyn's house, and he sees her brother gardening, and thinking it's me, he rips him out of the bushes, and her dad was fucking pissed. He called the cops, and the Grimace ends up having to apologize. So now it's the Grimace who's in trouble, and this feels like insane. He's supposed to be working with the cops to find me, but instead he's got to explain himself to the cops. How rad is that? So another 2 weeks of cat and mouse rolls by. The tribe just cherishing the task of harassing the Grimace, smearing like dog shit on the handle of the rental car, you know, like, left your little Tootsie Roll, didn't I? Or like, or smashing like bare asses up on the windows of the little Amsterdam cafe. Ham and eggs! Breakfast spoiled. Check, please. I love the tribe, you know. Like, they really excel at shit like that. So, yeah, Matt's daily intelligence brief becomes like my, you know, my daily comic strip. Until one day, those sightings of the Grimace, they just cease. Perhaps he's thrown his ring around some other town. Perhaps he's just fucking given up. But the coast, it seems, is clear. And it's a relief, this ever-present anxiety of this escape. It's a lot to bear, but now it feels as if things are starting to ease off. And I have a sense that I might just pull this whole thing off. And so, you know, what to do now? Go back to normal? Like back to my old life before I was taken? Back in the day, the tribe, they'd all be over at my house, you know, skating the ramp and watching the Blue Beach jam out. My house, it was Cheers, like the third place. But now the ramp is gone. The house is sold. Cyclops up at the grow patch. It's like, no, 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 you know, I cannot go home. So I go to Sally's instead. Her house has taken the place of mine. The new Cheers, the new third place. you know, the party house. And, you know, for all my friends, it's summer vacation. You know, a time to chew on lotus leaves. But me, I got a lot on my mind. And so I spend a lot of time talking to Sally. She becomes like my confidant. And I confide in her about a lot of things. About how frightening it was to be kidnapped by the Grimace. And how afraid I am that he'll find me and do it again. And she's more than an ear to bend. You know, Sally's a natural. She knows when to listen and not to judge. And when to bring up practical points that in my teenage exuberance, I might have just breezed past. But it was really, really nice. She was a million times better therapy than fucking Tim Tubbs ever was, that's for sure. So one day, Sally comes over to Adam's house to pick me up because Adam was gone. He might have been taking an SAT prep class or something. Because, you know, it was that time of year where seniors have to sit for the SATs because in a few months, fall semester starts and it's time to start applying to schools. You know, real adult stuff. So I'm left alone at Adam's house and Sally cruises over. And she had this beater Honda Civic, like the front seat you couldn't sit in it for some reason. I don't remember why. It was like broken or she had a bunch of work stuff in there. It was kind of like, you know, the London cab where you sit in the back and the driver's up front. And so we take off and she says to me, and I'll never forget this. So there she is driving me up to her place. And she says, I know you're under a lot of stress and I'm willing to do whatever it takes for you to like relax. And I'm like, okay, I don't really know what to make of that. So anyways, we get to her place where normally there's a gang of kids hanging out, you know, screwing around. But today there's nobody there, which is a bit strange. We're hanging out in the backyard, and I start telling her, I've been thinking seriously, you know, about going to Europe. Maybe Paris. You know, I could form a band over there, you know, do some French New Wave. But Sally, she gently, you know, leads me to the disappointing conclusion that my little French excursion would require a few things, like a passport, you know, and some money, you know, neither of which I have. And I'm like, yeah, I don't know, maybe. And inside I'm like, ah, oh, damn, no rad French chicks for me. And then out of nowhere, she's like, hey, I got tab of acid. You want to split it? And I'm like, I don't know, you know, like I've never done acid before. And she's like, we'll split it. It won't be a lot. It'll be mellow. And I'm like, yeah, it will be mellow. As if I have any concept of what is mellow. I don't give an explicit yes or like a tacit no. But the next thing I know, we're in her bedroom. Because that's where the acid is. Imagine like if Stevie Nicks had a bedroom. Velvet cushions and incense and candles and like fucking dream catchers, you know, that kind of vibe. So we do the acid and we're waiting for it to come on. And I pick up this purple crystal. I'm like, whoa, you know, cool crystal. Where'd you get it? And she tells me this elaborate backstory of how, like, I didn't find the crystal, it found me. And then she presses it to my heart chakra. And it's like, hey, do you feel anything? And I'm like, I think so. And she's like, oh, okay, cool. Keep trying. And then slowly, the acid starts coming on. I'm trying to get, like, the crystals to work, but they won't. You know, I just can't feel the energy. But the acid's working. I, like, take two crystals, and I got them, like, pointed at my head. And I'm like, is this any good? And she's like, I don't know. Do you feel anything? And I'm like, no. And, like, we're dissolving into laughing fits, you know, just two cackling hyenas. And then the giggles subside, and it's just like, whoa, this is weird. Because I'm sitting on this 37-year-old woman's bed, tripping on acid. Not tripping balls, but definitely buzzing. So the crystal set aside, and now I'm into this, she had like this sort of like steampunk, like perfume sprayer, like what do they call those, like an atomizer, I think. And yeah, so I'm like exploring the shit out of this thing. And out of the blue, all of a sudden she's like, hey, I want to take a shower. Do you want to take a shower? Huh? And I'm like, no, you know, I took one at Adam's house. I'm totally not putting two and two together. And so, like, she goes into the bathroom, and I hear her turn on the shower. And me, I go back to, like, bonding with this atomizer. And then I hear her call out, you know, it's like, Jow? And I go, yeah. And she's like, hey, can you come in here and wash my back? And I'm like, wait, whoa, she wants me to wash her back? I mean, who washes their back? You know, you can't reach it. But okay, I guess that's why she's asking me. So I'm like, yeah, sure, you know? And so I go in, you know, with the atomizer. And I'm like, hey. And she's like, hey, there's a sponge on the counter. And so now, like, you know, my acid-soaked brain, yeah, has to part ways with the atomizer. And now I'm in a world with a sponge. I wet it and get it all soapy and then just sort of, like, stick my hand through the shower curtain. And, you know, I just start scrubbing. It's just so fucking weird. Is that her back or is that somewhere else? And she takes my hand and, like, leads it to her back, which is, I mean, she had a beautiful back. I mean, she's a good-looking lady, you know? You know, sort of petite with a nice body and, like, beautiful face. She had these big, like, kind of brown cat eyes and straight jet black hair with, like, short bangs. It kind of got this, like, photographic negative vibe of, like, Nico from the Velvet Underground. Or like, Chrissy Hynde from the Pretenders. And her skin is super soft. And it's been like ages since I've even touched a girl. And I'm on acid. And like, you know, she's kind of moaning a little bit. And her voice is a little slower, a little more sultry. And then it's like the Animal House thing. Like a devil pops up on my shoulders like, you know, get in there, man. And then like an angel on the other side, you know, Joe, you know, stay on your side of the curtain. I'm like, I don't know who to listen to. I just stand there, you know, and just keep scrubbing. You know, which seems like an eternity. Like, how long do you even need to wash it back for? I don't even know. So finally I'm like, okay, I'm gonna go back to the atomizer. I don't know what I said. And she's like, okay, baby, just leave it here, thanks. And I'm like, whoa, like, she just called me baby. Back at the bedroom, I'm insanely freaked out. I don't know where to sit. So I just end up, like, sitting right on the edge of the bed and, you know, start tripping out on this dream catcher. And then, you know, I hear the water shut off and Sally comes into the bedroom. And she's wrapped in a towel. And she sits down next to me. And before I know it, you know, we start making out. We're pawing at each other and like, and I start kissing her neck and my nose floods with the scent of Chanel No. 5, which is at once super sexy yet like super confusing because I recognize the scent. It's the perfume my mom's friend used to wear. But anyways, with like a fleck of her wrist, you know, she lets the towel drop away. And now she's, you know, unbuttoning my thrift shop shirt. Before we know it, we're both naked. She pushes me back on the bed, onto the atomizer, which sprays me with what I recognize as Chanel No. 5, which is a perfume my mom's friend used to wear. Myself. It was like instinctive, you know? I just got on top of her. Before you know it, we were having sex. And like within two strokes, I came inside of her and she was just like, oh, baby, it's okay, let it go. Of course, the orgasm felt great. And then I immediately start panicking, you know, oh, fuck, did I just become a father? But Sally, you know, she can see that I'm freaking out, and she puts me at ease and lets me know she's on birth control. And so, you know, I'm relieved and invigorated. We regroup and go at it again. That night back at the Carbajals, I sneak a club with Benjamin.
And it's like, wow, man, you know, aside from living here under Hank's protection, like, I have a whole new secret. I've just lost my virginity to Adam's girlfriend's mom.
Next time on Escape from Provo Canyon.
Now she's sitting Indian style on the bed. She's got the incense going, and she's flipping cards. Real paranoid shit. And then she flips over a card, and we both freeze, and she points. And it's death.